CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. All right, what a day. Let's get cracking. I say what a day, and it's only just begun. All right, let us know what's up in the comments, and do all that liking and subscribing and stuff. Otherwise, what's the point, right? I mean, you know, if YouTube doesn't know you very important, then are you important? Are you even doing a show? I mean, this is what they tell me. So let's get on with it. Like and subscribe and comment, in fact. Didn't I make a deal the other day that if we didn't get like 50 comments after the first show that I said that about, we wouldn't do any more shows? I didn't go back and check, but I'm going to have to now. So I'll do that over the weekend. If we haven't got the 50 comments, then, you know, then maybe we won't have a show on Monday. How about that? Yes, I'm threatening, so, you know, don't let me do it anymore. It's good to be alive this Friday. I saw a very strange comment from someone over the weekend, obviously someone who's emigrated last weekend, said something like, oh, it was so great to visit South Africa, but I can't wait to get out of this place. It is, you know, it's falling apart or whatever. I thought, what a cheek. You come here for a holiday. Clearly you've had a good time. And then you, on leaving, you decide to drop an insult. I'm like, that's kind of ungrateful, you know? I'm sure that everybody during your trip here, I'm not even sure if this person used to be South African or anything else, but I have a suspicion they were. It was something someone else shared, so I don't know this person directly. But I was like, wow. So you came here, you enjoyed our hospitality, you enjoyed obviously a very nice holiday, probably brought some family with you, and then on your way out of the door, you're like, ah, fuck you guys. I just thought, wow, that's in very poor taste to kind of leave an insult at the door as you head out. I think it's just indicative to me of somebody who's trying to prove to themselves that that living outside of here is better than living here, even though you've chosen and paid to come on a holiday here, which makes me think you might not be saying what you really feel or feeling what you're really saying, certainly not doing what you say. So that's always my, you know, definition of integrity. So clearly someone who does that can't really be a person who's very honest with themselves or with anyone else most of the time. So I think there's a lot to be happy about at the moment. And I'm obviously going to take us down a road now where I'm going to try and counterbalance all my optimism with a couple of observations of the last week, which I'm trying to do on a Friday just to kind of give us a bit of balance. And, you know, Friday's a good day to reflect as you go into the weekend, some things to think about. We have sufficient distance from all of the craziness of what's going on in Europe and Russia and the Ukraine at the moment, not to mention America or China or India. And all these places are a fair way away. Even by plane, it's still quite a long trip. And I think often that can be a massive disadvantage, but it can be a huge advantage. And, you know, I've been taking in quite a bit of news over the last while, and it seems to me that Europe is going to be heading into a very, very cold winter, particularly, you know, Germany, Poland, even the Netherlands, Belgium, France, perhaps. Italy is likely to drop out of the EU somewhere in the next couple of months. And that's not going to be a deal breaker for the EU because Italy's not massively important. Surprise, surprise, they don't really have one of the strongest economies anymore. They might have at one point been a contender. But Italy, I mean, the politics of Italy, it is so complicated. If you think Australia, with their changing of prime ministers, you know, every 100 days or so, and that was something that Australia went through for a very, very long time, you think that's bad. Try and figure out what's going on in Italy. The other ones, obviously, Portugal, Greece, these are countries. Portugal's doing all right, actually. Not a very big economy, but they are very welcoming of legal immigrants, and they're trying to build up their economy by – and there are lots of South Africans there, apparently. A friend of mine was there just recently, said, tons of South Africans who moved to Portugal. Apparently very welcoming place, but they really are welcoming of your money first and foremost. So they're trying to find ways to make money. But Spain's in a little bit of a situation at the moment. Spanish farmers are up in arms, as are the Dutch. And you know, these are stories that don't get a huge amount of attention here, because we talked to JJ Cornish and we tried to discuss things that are going on in Africa. And obviously we can just scratch the surface in our 15 minutes or so that we have with JJ. But I do think Europe is in quite a precarious position right now. You know, those Dutch farmers who were driving their tractors down the main roads and blocking the freeways, I think it was 40,000 farmers. Now, I wonder how many farmers there are in South Africa. If they're more than 40,000, I would be impressed and surprised, because I don't think we have that many. You know, we've got the very big farmers, which are like maybe 2-3 generation families that have been farming the same land and have become ever more technologically adept and efficient. But I didn't realize this. Apparently Holland is the second biggest agricultural producer in the world. Now, I don't have to tell you that is a fairly startling statistic, because Holland is the size of a postage stamp. You could fit the whole of Holland into probably half of Swaziland. And remember, they've reclaimed much of that land from the sea. Most of the country is at sea level, which is why they have dikes and seawalls and artificial harbors and all kinds of things. And I'm just wondering, if you could piss off 40,000 of the world's most efficient farmers, whether that's necessarily a very good idea, particularly when food security is at the top of everyone's agenda. And I'm talking about food security with regard to the Russia-Ukraine conflict. We already know that they're responsible for producing most of the sunflower oil, which I don't think any of us realized before, and much of the wheat that feeds Europe and other parts of the world. Now, if Holland is the second biggest agricultural producer in the world and the farmers there are angry, that's very, very worrying. And I can't help thinking that Vladimir Putin just has to turn off the taps this winter, like he did when they were maintaining, in inverted commas, Nord Stream recently, for Europe to have a really, really hard time, and for death to ensue, because there are lots of old people in Europe. You know, they have the inverse population pyramid. Europeans are not producing enough offspring to replace themselves in the workforce. And there are a lot of old people. And old people in the winter, if they can't keep warm, they die. And this happens, you know, in cold European winters. The cold always kills more people, incidentally, than the heat does. So they're all complaining about a heat wave, particularly in the UK just recently. But, you know, you can always do something about the heat. You can hop in the shower. And by the way, that's another thing. They're having massive water shortages in Britain at the moment because of all this heat wave stuff. So just as we are always consumed by the things that are wrong with us, and that's right, because you can't, if you're not thinking about your survival and you're not thinking about the optimal conditions for, first of all, making sure that you and your family are safe and secure and that you can live somewhere peacefully and all of that stuff, you could end up in a bit of trouble. So you can't afford to be myopic about these things. But we do. We complain about Eskom. We complain about our incompetent government. But I've just listed a few top-line things that are going on in Europe at the moment. And I'm very, very concerned that all of this is going to obviously have a spillover effect on everyone else. Food insecurity is obviously a big concern. This energy crisis that they're going through in Europe as a result of the Russian situation is a big concern. You know, Germany is rushing against the clock to try and switch on old coal-fired power stations. They are going back into nuclear. This is the Germans. And if the German economy fails, or if Germany fails to maintain, and I'm not saying this is going to happen, but if Germany in any way does not meet its energy targets, and if German people start to suffer as a result of Russia turning off the taps, you can say goodbye to the European Union. There is no EU without Germany at the center of it. So I'm very, very confused about why anyone would think, and I mean, I've had lots of friends who've been on amazing European holidays this summer, and I'm glad for them, because I don't know if next European summer is going to be nearly as much fun. I think there are going to be some massive financial energy and food crunches going on in Europe in the next while. And I think everybody who's paying attention to these things is seeing them as being obvious and being inevitable. So when we talk about how we fit into the world and what our problems are, sure, they're enormous. I mean, Eskom is a major, major problem here in South Africa. And energy has been our problem for the last, 14 years. Production has been hit really hard. Manufacturing, even small businesses, you know, little spaza shops and things that had to keep the fridges running and then had to throw out a whole lot of stuff because it went off thanks to load shedding, power interruptions. There are places in Pretoria today that are without water. Of course, that's because they're trying to do maintenance. It's not because there's an outage. But still, these things are concerning. And I wonder, because I always talk about how human progress is on this unbelievable upward trajectory. And it's something that's borne out by the research of someone who I spoke to just last year, Marian Tupi at humanprogress.org, which you need to go and take a look at. I mean, he's really done all the research for you. And if you look at this stuff and you see that everywhere in the world, it kind of strikes me as, almost unbelievable the kinds of terrible decisions that governments have made in the last 2.5 years. And again, I know that there are people who've listened to the show for a long time, so I'm not going to go over old territory here, but for the people who've just started listening to us in the last 2 years, because our audience doubled in 2020 and doubled again in 2021. So you may not be as familiar with me as maybe the people who started with us 8 years ago or even listened when we were on commercial radio and all the rest of it. I've been saying for a long time that we've got to move away from centralized governments. We've got to move away from central control by governments, that ultimately the future of humanity and the happiness, the increased happiness of humanity, is dependent on us creating these disintermediated kinds of government, where your local government is really the most important one, and then your municipality that's closest, and then your provincial government, and then your national government. And national government must be something that touches your life very, very seldom. Maybe the only place that it really becomes a part of your existence is in your tax, which you pay to the central treasury, obviously, no matter where in the world you live. But that was all disrupted because we were on a good path to getting there. And government meant less and less to us as we were moving that direction. And then suddenly this COVID thing happened, which now, again, with the benefit of hindsight, we can all tell was a hopeless overestimation of the problem, and the cure they prescribed was worse than the disease. Lockdowns, you know, a complete economic shutdown. The whole world. They're like, well, we're going to put this whole thing on hold. And they thought, these idiots in government who've probably been at university too long and have never really done a real job, never tried to earn money in the real market, these people told the rest of us, No, we're shutting this down for your safety, for your health. But that word safe keeps coming up. I don't feel safe. You hear this all over the place. Your safety is number one to us. And we saw it happen all over the world. Mostly the countries that made the decisions based on scant evidence and usually evidence just from the medical fraternity. Now, of course, they don't think about economics. If you're a doctor or if you're on a health panel, or if you've studied medicine your whole life at university, and maybe you're a lecturer in that sort of thing, and those are the people we went to at the beginning of the pandemic, remember? They were the ones who, for their entire existence is based around trying to keep people alive. So in order to have maximum effect of that, they didn't consider economic consequences or political consequences of that kind of thing. They just considered, okay, they've asked me for my opinion because I'm good at prioritizing saving life. And so that's exactly what the information was that we had and we followed. And we followed that information to our detriments, because the countries that led the way here were, Britain, the US, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and then all the other countries just followed them. And of course, China was the most draconian of those. And up to just a little while ago, I think it might even still be in some places, China had a zero COVID policy, which meant they were going to try and stamp it out completely, because they have no understanding of how your politics doesn't matter to a virus, you know. So up to a short while ago, China had still been implementing severe and complete lockdowns. And it has now emerged, with the benefit of hindsight, that first of all, that doesn't necessarily save lives, because once you unpause the economy, once you open up the country, the virus just hits harder than ever, which happened in places like New Zealand. But also that your economy takes an enormously long time and needs fairly inert conditions to get back to where it was, or to even attempt to get halfway back to where it was. You can't just pause like a game, ships at sea, supply line, manufacturing, production, agricultural production. You can't just pause these things. And when you do, and you unpause them, they don't just start up straight away where they were and immediately fill the gaps. It's clear to everyone on earth right now that that is the condition. But somehow the people who made the decision to put the pause button on are the ones who continued to make bad decisions after the pause. In other words, those very governments that made it their policy to put a hold on the economy and to lock down the citizens of their countries then followed that up by making the most stupid decisions available to them. Joe Biden, you know, with an economy that was just raring to go, all he had to do was open the gates. And instead, he pumped trillions into the economy and inflated the dollar and messed with fuel prices as a result of the supply line challenges and the fact that he'd made terrible decisions in terms of America's own energy independence, you know, things like like fracking and natural gas and oil drilling, which he just refused to acknowledge needed to be continued. He was like, no, we'll green the economy. All over the first world, everybody's obsessed with greening the economy to the detriment, the obvious detriment of their own economies and the lives of the people who live in those countries. And yet, we don't seem to be able to identify who it is we should blame for the ugly situation that Europe and that America and that China and that most of the rest of the world, as a result of those people being affected, have been affected. We must blame these politicians. We must hold them responsible. And it occurs to me that any of the problems, the unforeseen consequences that now develop as a result of those terrible decisions that have been made over the last 2.5, 3 years, we can lay at the feet of these politicians. They should be voted out of office like Boris Johnson already has, like it appears Jacinda Ardern might, and Justin Trudeau might, and Cyril Ramaphosa might. And we should be pleased to get rid of these people. They have proven themselves inept and incompetent at every level of the crises that have affected this planet in the last 2.5 years. And we should not take them seriously on things like the environment or the world economy. I'm really, really concerned that, to go back to that friend of a friend who was complaining about South Africa on their way out, that we're still living in this world where we think certain places are safe and other places are not. That word safe, when you hear someone say it in a political, economic, or social context, you need to be very wary of that person. Anyone who uses the word safe to describe conditions that they will supposedly create for you or that are available in their country is absolutely guaranteed to be lying to you. And a politician who uses that next time round, because they're going to be more crises for them to pretend they're in charge of, we should immediately get the warning lights going, because those people have fucked it up already and we can't afford for them to fuck it up again. So I think this is important. That's why I brought it up this Friday. And it's also the only opportunity I get in the week to talk like this, because normally we, you know, having conversations and all the rest of it. Let's just see what's going on in the comments. Gareth, I'd like to know your opinion on Klaus Schwab and the Great Reset. You'll own nothing and you'll be happy. Yeah, but I think that Klaus Schwab is like a, he's like a Bond villain brought to life. I mean, it's weird to me that there's someone who's so openly opposed to human progress, who's in charge of the World Economic Forum, who's published a book on how much he hates humanity, called The Great Reset, and who's actively interfering by putting World Economic Forum candidates for political position all over the world and seeing to it that they are supported. I mean, you know, here's something, here's a point that DK makes. The Germans laughed at Trump when he warned them. Oh, they've continued to laugh at Trump. They thought Trump was a big old joke. You know, here's this guy who, you know, pushes people out of his way at world summits and things. But Donald Trump warned the Germans about energy when he was president. He said to them, in no uncertain terms, I'm sure you can find the clip if you look it up, you guys better not be dependent on Russia for fuel and energy. And the Germans are like, ah, pff, what do you know, Donald Trump? You know? And then they, obviously, they you got weird hair and you're a New York, you know, property guy, and you're a misogynist, and you've been married to all these women, and you don't treat other women with respect, and all this crap that had nothing to do with what he was saying. Because that's obviously the best way to at least gain some ground when you have no decent arguments, is to attack the man instead of the ball, which is what they did throughout his presidency. You know, I have problems with Trump too. We've discussed those 1,000 times. And I can't help thinking that for all those people who really, really hate Trump, they're going to have to sit through a very, very high likelihood that he will be back for another 4 years soon. I think some people are going to go need counseling during those 4 years, because it may well happen that America decides this is the guy we want back. And when that happens, all these people who've tried their best to wail and scream and moan and torture themselves about Donald Trump for the last 4 years and the last two, while he hasn't been president, his 4 years of presidency and the last two as well, they're gonna be in for a world of pain, extra pain that they weren't expecting. But yes, the Germans didn't listen. And now, if they had listened, who knows? They may have been in a better position. Someone says here, if you hate living in South Africa, then decide to leave and never come back. Yeah, look, I mean, I think you make your own decisions. Wherever you want to live, that's absolutely fine. You go for it. And I hope you're happier. That's all. I don't really care. If people want to move to wherever they want to move to, that's great, especially if it's to pursue an opportunity, to do something new, to explore the world, to maybe give your kids a chance at something that you didn't have. Great, go for it. And if geography is your chief motivator there, that's also good. Chris T says, what happened to No Politics Friday? Well, as I said, I'm sorry, this is the only time I get to talk like this. G-Star says, the ANC should be dismantled as a criminal and communist organization. Yeah, but G-Star, I have to say this, because I've seen your comments through the course of the week. I do pay attention to the comments, I promise. You're turning into a one-trick pony, because every time you comment, it's the same thing over and over again. So just if you can like change it up a little, because if there was a G-Star show, we'd be bored after 15 minutes. Basitsana says, hi, Bo. When are you shaving, Gareth? You look so dusty. It's enough now. Yeah, I'm getting rid of that today. I couldn't agree more. Basitsana, I'm so on your page. We'll talk to Ben about that when he comes on at 5:30. And we've also got Dr. Jonathan Witt joining us today, which will be fun. Haven't had him on for a while. Whenever he's on, it's on the Burning Platform. And I feel like it's fun to have him on when we're not just talking politics. The economy is synonymous with life, says Wandile. Too bad that in saving lives, the politicians put us in ICU. Well, did they even save lives? This is the point, right? If you compare, I think I put that graph up on the show just the other day. You compare the graph of countries that are, that had lost citizens, you know, who died during the pandemic, and you compare the lockdown countries to the non-lockdown countries, and there's zero difference. So made no difference. All it did was send the economy, as you put it, into ICU. So I agree with you. And again, this is not something we should just let go of. You know, I hear a lot of people going, ah, you know, it's done. It's in the past. If we don't learn from these mistakes, these politicians will do it again. And we really can't afford to have them do it again. If they try this lockdown shit again, we have to forcibly eject them from office. I want you to pay careful attention to what's going on in Sri Lanka as a final thought on this topic, because I don't want to go beyond 6:30 on this. Go and look at what's just happened in Sri Lanka. This is a country which was food secure. They had a growing economy. And the world's leaders pressured the leaders of Sri Lanka, who were corrupt. I mean, leaders here are corrupt. They pressured them from the outside to take on certain climate change priorities, let's put it that way, to mess with the economy. Now, remember, an economy is a very sensitive thing. It's quite robust in certain ways, but it's sensitive to overall political interference. You know, if people aren't, for an economy to thrive, it is now, I mean, if I have to explain this to people, you're either an idiot or you're actually evil. But the free market is the best way for anyone in the world to improve their lives and for an economy as a whole to grow and for more people to have opportunities to do things and to participate in that economy meaningfully. Free market. In other words, I'm not talking about corporations, mercantilism, corporatism. You can go and look up these definitions for yourself. I'm talking about a free market where I can trade with Onkopotse or, you know, Corona's Boring or Chris T or G-Star, any of the people in the comment section. I am selling a phone. You want to buy a phone. Nobody else is involved. You decide how much you're prepared to pay. I say this is my price. We meet somewhere in the middle. That's a free market. And if you don't think my price is fair, you walk away. And if I don't think your offer is fair, I walk away. We don't have any purchase on each other beyond that deal. That's a free market. When governments fiddle with that, as they have in Sri Lanka, you have tremendous pressure brought to bear, and it affects every part of the economy. When you try to make rules, as the Dutch government are trying to make rules, about how farmers can't create pollution, or farmers can't farm in certain areas, or certain things can't be used in order to farm more efficiently, whether it's, you know, fertilizers or any of that stuff, that's going to mess the economy up. And guess what? There are going to be consequences to that. Because these politicians don't understand how farming works. So they make a rule, and then the farmers go, but guys, it's not going to work. The politician's like, well, we're in charge, we make the rules. And then the Dutch farmers take to the roads, and somewhere thousands of people are going to be hungry because those farmers aren't going to be able to produce at the rate that they might have before the government started interfering. So in Sri Lanka, they stormed the presidential palace a couple of weeks ago. It's a big story. Obviously, didn't get a lot of attention in the world because politicians and most of the legacy media, the mainstream media, don't want to show too many revolutions. It makes everybody uncomfortable, makes the politicians who are currently in charge feel uncomfortable. Look at what happened in Sri Lanka. Could very easily happen in all kinds of places. And if it does, it's bad news for all of us. So just pay attention to these things, even if the media is saying to you, oh, you know, there was a racist incident at high school. And you're like, oh, clickbait. Because, of course, you know, racism is like a red rag to a bull, especially to South Africans. We hear that word and we're like, we've got to focus on that then. It's not the most important story. We should be paying 20 times the attention that we pay to a racist incident, which is a rare thing, which is why it still makes the news. And thankfully, I mean, a rare thing that let's hope we get to a point where there are no such things. But it's also something that in this country immediately gets attention. But Sri Lanka, people are like, well, I don't even know if I could point to that on a map. Look at what's happened there. It's very important. It's important to us. It's important to the rest of the world. And it shows you how governments can screw up what is good by taking on priorities that are not theirs. And I do hope that someone in our government is paying attention to our priorities. We need to look after our farmers. We need to make sure we're food secure. We need to make sure that we can keep the energy up to where it needs to be. And a couple of moves have been made in the right direction there. Cyril saying that we can start selling energy back into the grid. Private power suppliers can get working. That's good stuff. Tiny little moves. I think the ANC was pressured into that, frankly. But it's happening, right? And these things are all very, very good signs. We just need to see more of them and keep up the pressure. All right, here he is. Where's Ben Karpinski? Let me bring him in here. How's it, Ben? We can't hear you. Hang on. You're on mute.
Yeah. But now, but now.
Yeah, there we go. We're on. How's it?
Sorry, I'm on a new computer today. I tried to plug my microphone in and then it wouldn't.
It's fine. It sounds good. What's going on?
Yeah, I tell you what's going on. That Cyril, that useless prick, he was never going to do that on his own account.
No, of course not.
You have to threaten the ANC and push them to do things by good. They have no understanding of that shit.
The only way the ANC's ever done anything right is when they've been forced into a corner by civil society. Only time, totally. Ever. They've never made a good decision on their own. So,
which just shows they're in the way and we don't need them. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Gareth, it's been a very interesting week. I'm obviously going to Australia next Friday.
Oh, yeah. Excited?
So I'm booking accommodation. Yeah, but I'm going like for a long time. So I've got to be in Melbourne for 11 nights, Brisbane for 3 nights.
Yeah.
So I'm actually, yeah, like, and there's no way I want to stay in a hotel for 11 nights. Mm-mm. Firstly, hugely expensive. Secondly, ugh. So I've booked an apartment in South Yarra.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it made me realize, like, I used to be a big fan of Australia. You know, obviously COVID changed my opinion a little bit about them. But I've always liked that country. I've always wanted to go. So now I'm like, I'm getting excited about this. And to be able to spend almost 2 weeks in Melbourne, which everyone says is quite a cool place. Yeah, I'm very excited for next week.
Well, I'm kind of interested to hear your point of view on Australia, because we've often spoken about it. And I know you've been to New Zealand. You've been to Oz before, though, right?
No, I just stopped over. I haven't actually stayed there.
Okay, well, I'm curious to hear your on the ground kind of reporting on this, because I know you'll be very honest. If you see things that are awesome, you'll tell us. And if you see things that are really stupid, you'll tell us too. So I'm curious to hear that stuff.
Yeah. Oh, look, I'll be 9 hours ahead. So I can't guarantee I'll be on the show for those 2 Fridays, but I'll definitely try.
No, well,
I'll try my damnedest.
Even when you get back, it's fine. We'll talk then. But it's going to be interesting to hear. All right, so everybody's talking about the beards. Your beard is obviously working. Bastana says your beard looks great. No, Ben says, Peter, the beard doesn't suit you. But he's a guy, so you don't care about his opinion.
Peter, I don't think the hat suits you, but hey, here we are.
Gareth, don't be a numbnut and moan at us for not commenting, says McGowan. Did it occur to you that most of us are driving to work and listen via the app? Yeah. All right. What I'm talking about is go on to the YouTubes afterwards and comment. Because then, and what I mean is like Apple reviews as well. Those things apparently matter. I keep being told by the producers that we need like the likes and the subscribes. Ben, you know about this stuff. It's part of what you do in your agency. People have got to do this, right? Yeah. Otherwise, it doesn't work. And
also, here on Spotify, when you go into the Gareth Cliff Show,
yeah,
you can also give it 5 stars.
There
didn't
we
know
go.
That either until about 2 weeks
See,
ago.
Do that.
So I gave it 4.
Why? Why 4? Fuck, Ben.
I don't know. I don't listen to a lot what of other stuff here.
What an asshole.
I'm only here for you when I have time, Gareth, which is today.
You
this son, morning.
What a piece of shit. Hey, did you see Jonathan Witt's going to join us after 7?
Oh, brilliant. Yeah. But I have to unfortunately go at 7:30-ish because I've got
fine.
This. I'm pitching to some very, very smart people at 8:30.
Okay. All right.
What's what I do.
I have to tell you, Ben, I'm getting rid of the beard today. It's enough. I've tried. It's good fun. It's been interesting. It's been it's something I've never had to do before. Like, I had to trim the beard last week, and it's just it's not a thing that I want to do. I feel like I'm half-dressed. I feel like I'm untidy. I feel like I'm wearing tracksuit pants with a beard, so I'm going to get rid of it.
Yeah, I totally get that. I mean, you're a presentable person and people look up to you. I am not, so I'm just kind of rolling, with this.
I don't know if I'm a presentable person people look up to me. I feel it's not good. So
when I go to my Moroccan barber next week, I think I'm just going to get it trimmed, but get him to do it properly, because they're obviously a people. I mean, those people, like when they were born, they had beards, so they know exactly what to do with them.
I mean, we had a dude of that kind of background on we had school with us, and he was shaving in first year of high school, and a 5 o'clock shadow by first break.
That must have been so hard, because I had guys also I went to school with. And it was by first break, you'd always get those shitty teachers or those really anal prefects going, "Hey, Muhammad, why haven't you shaved?"
It's right.
Like, dude, I woke up like this. What the fuck do you want me to do?
Yeah, exactly. I grow a beard in the time it takes you to do your stupid lecture, your class in, I don't know, geography.
There's a guy with one wispy blonde hair on his chin, and he's giving him gears about having a manly jawline.
Right.
But yeah, I think I'm going to keep it. I'm going to carry it on.
All right.
Yeah, I just, why not? I've got quite a boring, long face, so maybe the beard actually is going to help me.
Well, who knows, Ben? Maybe this may be the key. Finally, the missing piece of your puzzle. Who knows? I mean, you've been trying to find that missing piece.
I've worked so hard on so many other things.
So
this is it. The beard recovery.
We're going to try and do the rugby again tomorrow. Which I'm kind of excited about, because I didn't really. I mean, I watched the first half on last Saturday, and then I had to go. And I'm not really into it, Ben. I've tried. We're going to try it one more time, and then after that, you know, fool me once, shame on me. How does George W. Bush? I always hear him in my head. Fool me once, shame on. Fool me twice, you can't fool me again. That's what he always said, but it's fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. That's how it goes. But yes, George W.
You should know better. But Gareth, it's not about you. You know, we've watched two games of rugby together. Both have been against the All Blacks, and we've won both times. So you have to, for the country, make it three in a row tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, unfortunately, you're in. So you know, if you only watch the SA versus New Zealand games, I think that's a fair compromise.
Fair enough.
It's the biggest game.
Maybe I'm the lucky charm, because if I watch, we seem to win against New Zealand, who used to be one of the greatest rugby nations in the world. Would you say they still are? They're certainly having a shit time of it right now.
They are the fifth greatest nation in the world. And about 2 years ago, I said it for the first time. I said, New Zealand might not actually be a rugby nation in 10 years' time. Because whenever you're great at something, you have to have a good feeder system. And that is why South Africa will ultimately always, if managed properly, will always be a good rugby nation. Because we have amazing schools.
Right.
And we have oaks like Dukas and Frikas and Fricky, and they all come together and they want to just blixem each other. And then we've got other cultures in this country that are, I mean, we've got such a melting pot of athletic talent, which is incredible and is representative in the Springbok team. Mm-hmm. The All Blacks, they've got a very lazy country, basically. The very authoritarian, lazy. Mm-hmm. The kids are athletic, want to be MMA fighters or basketball players. The traditional schools, those kind of people, they've either moved to Australia or don't want to be in that situation. So they don't have the feeder system like they used to.
Right.
And they also they rely more on the Pacific Islanders to come through. They're using a lot more of their stock. They just don't have the structures that we have, and the game has become a lot more professional since SA basically left them.
Yeah,
they now play against Aussies that aren't strong enough. So now they get this higher sense of confidence from playing Super Rugby, which is zero nowadays, and then they just take a dicking to good teams. I mean, we've seen it. They lost to Ireland at home. I mean, as much as the scoreline kind of flattered them last week, we dominated them, like men and boys. And I think, you know, again, like, then people aren't going to sponsor that. So you take away the money, you take away the talent, you take away the interest, you take away the aura. Suddenly New Zealand is a Ford Fiesta. Sure, drives, but someone's actually going to conquer the world.
All right. Yeah, it's exciting. You're going to, also we're going to braai, aren't we? That's the plan.
We're going to braai. We're going to do a brisket.
Very South African. I'm very excited about this. I cannot say no to a braai.
We're going to be on the roof. We're going to have three kinds of animal. And
nice.
I'm very lucky. It's good, Gareth. You know, you work hard Monday to Friday, and then Saturday, it all comes together.
Saturday, eat three different kinds of animal. That should be all everyone's goal for the weekend.
It should be. It should be, especially if you know, you really focused on being a good person. And you know, you've got to buy your
how
meat.
How does that come into it? How does being a good person come into eating three kinds of animal?
It just does. It means you're in touch with who you are as a man.
Yeah. No.
You cannot argue this. I have a beard. I'm now wise.
Yeah, I'm also really excited about the fact that I do see the first little green shoots of spring, which always makes me happy. So from here on in, I just love this part of the year. It's great. You have to work overtime, and I know there are going to be things that are going to piss me off, but they're just not going to piss me off as much during this next couple of months. All the way to January, February, this is my happy time. It's a nice long stretch too. September, October, November, December, January, February. 6 whole months of the year that I'm happy, just automatically. Yeah. It's great.
Well, March and April are arguably better than December and Jan, but I always think, and like, you're always so gloomy at your birthday, which is coming up.
Ugh.
But I think this is the best time in Joburg, right? Because winter's so desolate, the high felt that we live in. There's nothing really going on. And then as it gets warmer, things start to smell better, like you smell jasmine and other things other than dust. And then, like, there's such as like this hype around summer that summer
dust and dust often and is anti-climax. Dust and thanks to the river in front of me, feces, dust and feces. But otherwise, winter's, you know, as you say, it's not very pretty.
How you phrase it? You could say dust and feces.
All right. So a few things we want to get to. You know what I'm a little bit sick of, and maybe this links to the thing that you wanted to talk about with crying. I'm just a little bit sick of people talking about their feelings all the time. I've just had kind of enough of this, and I know, you know, last week we spoke about relationships and like men and women and how we get along and how we interact and all that stuff. But I even know women who've had enough of people who constantly talk about their feelings. Can we just be very aware of how often we use the word feel? Because it's sort of taken the place of the word think in so many places. I don't hear people saying, I think this would be a good idea, or I think we should try and do that as a business, or I think me and my family should do this, or I think I want to achieve X, Y, Z. They're like, I feel like I, or I feel X, or this person makes me feel this way, or I'm not sure I feel good about that. People who use the word feel more than the word think are starting to irritate the hell out of me at the moment. And I have been very aware over the past 6-7 years, and that's a fairly arbitrary number, but let's say the last 10 years of my life, I've been paying extra careful attention to actually listening to the words people use, because it gives you enormous insight into what they really do think and feel. And if they use the word feel more than they use the word think, then they're not a very thoughtful person. They're actually telling you about themselves. They're giving away the secret of how they see the world and of how they want the world to see them. Pay attention to these things. It's you don't have to be a psychic. You don't have to be someone who can read minds or predict the future. But if people keep saying feel instead of think, then at least you know what you're dealing with. And similarly, if you're in a room full of people who think and you're the only one who feels, you better adjust to the environment. Otherwise, you are going to be left behind in a conversation like that. You know, if I'm in a room full of people who are feeling the whole time, I know what I've got to do in order to get the result I want in that room. And similarly for thinking. Well, sometimes, yeah. Sometimes it is, because sometimes it's just a big group therapy session with people like that. And I've noticed on social media, this is pretty much all that's – I mean, I don't go on Facebook very often, right? But Facebook has pretty much become a place of feeling now. People are just constantly talking about how they feel on Facebook. I'm not sure about Twitter. I'm not paying enough attention there. Instagram is still very visual. So it doesn't really matter what you think or feel on Instagram. It's all about what it looks like. But Facebook has all become about feelings. And on the rare occasions that I have been on there, and you scroll through it and people are like, well, this is how I'm feeling at the moment. I'm feeling a bit down. Or I feel like blah, blah, blah is happening. Or whatever. It's just enough. Am I stupid? Or is this something that other people... Have you picked this up as well?
No, as always, I think you've hit the nail on the head here. Firstly, you've got to look at what's more difficult. Thinking is more difficult than feeling, right? So everyone feels. And then because of social media and because of just the way things are being the last 4 or 5 years, and, you know, people need to be cognizant of the fact that your feelings really matter. And corporates jump on this kind of shit because it makes them sound like they've got a handle on modern society. But the more that we indulge the feelings, the less we think. I mean, I cannot say it better than you've just said it. Thinking is what gets us into places, right? So mm-hmm. if you ever look at something and go, well, what's the result of this thing that we're doing? And if the result is nothing, then we really shouldn't do it so much. So if everyone is feeling, no one is thinking. If no one's thinking, then life isn't very good, is it? Nothing new yeah. will be created. Like, I feel that we should go and make a building over there.
Well, also, it's okay. You see the feeling. Yeah, I mean, the people who use feel more than think are also the people who care more about how other people feel about them than what other people yes. think of them. So this is the problem. It's like we've got a whole bunch of people who are performative all day long. They're doing things yes. that they imagine will make everyone like them more. Will make the other people feel better about them. So you see this with politicians. You see it with people who are even in the workplace. A lot of people are just posturing. They're putting on a show. They're performing so that you will feel that they're nice people, which doesn't matter at all to me. I have no idea of whether you feel I'm a good person or not, and I don't think it gives me one moment's sleeplessness. I'm not lying there worrying about how you feel about me on any given day.
Yeah, that's because you've got better things to worry about. But, you know, Ruth does make a decent comment in the comments, oddly enough.
Yeah.
So people talk about mental health, and I think lots of people have mental health issues.
Yes.
But I think we always have. And it's just that, like, there's this butane of social media being put onto existing mental health issues, which we've always had.
Right.
But what she said about men not understanding their feelings leads to mental health, I also get that. But I think a lot of times men do have mental health issues because they've been told or they've been encouraged to embrace these feelings.
Ah,
a
please.
Lot of the time, they just
just
get on with it.
But a lot of men don't have a lot of deep, meaningful feelings. I don't wake up in the morning full of feelings. I honestly don't. Ruth, there are differences between men and women, and this is a good point. By the way, George Meany, who will join us later on today, says quite rightly here, language is the greatest invention in human history. It's a window to our souls if you listen carefully. Spot on, George. Spot on. I'll get back to the feeling thing in a minute. See, George is thinking here. This is why I like what he's saying. Perhaps people use the word feel because it's the only thing that someone can't dispute. Ah, spot on.
Great point.
Spot on, George. This is exactly right. And it's a get-out-of-jail-free card. In other words, if you say you feel a certain way, you can't argue with that because you don't need facts when you're telling people how you feel. You don't need to have read a book. You don't have to know any information. You don't have to have a point of view. You just have to say what you feel, and it's irrefutable, right? So George has hit the nail on the head there. Spot on. But to go back to Ruth, I don't really have a lot of feelings. I have 10% of the feelings most people have. There's no way.
Seven.
Okay. I'm not proud of that. I know it makes me less empathetic. And, you know, when people start talking about their relationships or their dead gran or, you know, how they're upset by something someone said to them at work or whatever. I just want to get the fuck out of the room when people talk like that. And I know that's not nice. I get it. So I'm the exception. I'm probably not the rule, which is fine. Means that I've had to adjust so that when people start talking about their dead gran, I know that I must just shut up, look like I'm being and I don't usually. I mean, this is a horrible thing to admit, but I don't. If I don't know your gran, how can I get upset about her being dead? Purely on a logical, sensible, unemotional plane. Your gran means nothing to me. She didn't while she was alive. She means nothing to me while I'm dead. If I care about you, however, I know that the appropriate human reaction is for me to go, I'm really sorry about that. That's a shit thing to happen. Tell me. And then let them talk, because it's about their feelings, right? I don't have a lot of need to share my feelings all day and night, and I don't really need to hear everybody else's all day and night. And that's maybe a Gareth thing, or it may be a male thing, or it may be a way I was raised thing, and you can criticize the hell out of me. I don't mind, but that's how I am. So I'm not going to sit there and dwell in my feelings and navel gaze all day long about how, you know, certain things make me feel. Really, it's just such a waste of time. And if there are those people who still believe that the biggest problem in the world is that men don't share their feelings, well, first of all, let me tell you that you probably don't understand men. Second of all, let me tell you that even if they do get into their feelings, it's usually kind of pathetic and unnecessary, and no one really is that interested in men's feelings. Who's wandering around the world right now going, ah, I really want to hear from all these men about their feelings? Who? Who's that person? Who has the time?
Do you think that Joe Rogan would have the biggest podcast in the world if he literally turned the mic on and said, I'm feeling a bit low today? I'm not sure, but I've got someone else over here who's also feeling a bit low, and we're going to discuss why we're feeling low together.
Oh.
The guy would never have 10 listeners.
But I've walked into conversations like that, sometimes with men, but usually with women, talking to each other about how, oh, you know, and it makes me feel like I'm not as sexy as when we first started dating. And I wish I just knew what he was feeling. And you want to run out of the room screaming.
Yeah,
so that's, and then over. And then the yeah, worst, like, by the way, the worst that you could walk in on is two guys talking like that. Two guys like dwelling in their feelings and, oh, you know, I'm really feeling quite down about things, and, you know, I'm not making the contribution that I feel I could at work and all this shit. I mean, that's just so awful. That kind of conversation is like kryptonite to me.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if you've got feelings, it's like a reminder that you are a human. We do have feelings.
Sure.
Right? We do feel emotional time to time.
Right.
But, you know, we also feel lazy. I mean, we also feel like non-communicative and stuff. These aren't good things. Just because it happens doesn't mean it has to be what we do. You know, I go back to these things because it's a great reference for me, but I had a lot of feelings before I started lifting weights. Now I think a lot more because I feel I can do more with my life. So feeling is like a now and a past thing. Thinking is a future thing. So if you become more capable of a person, you start thinking about more stuff. It's like, okay, I do this, so I think I should do that as well. When you feel, you go, I feel shit, so I'm not going to do anything. Like it's like a two-way cycle. The feeling always looks back, the thinking always looks forward.
Yeah, and different strokes, hey? Like some people really want to like do that stuff. Some people want to do other stuff. Let everybody do their thing. I don't think I want to be around people who only feel and think the way I do. It's way more interesting to expose yourself to stuff.
In the comments, like Asher says, you know, a great podcast called Modern Wisdom talks about male loneliness this week. And I've gone through this kind of stuff. I've been a lonely male. I'll be the first to say that this is obviously a topic some people should talk about because you should get out of it. Like, and that's not me ridiculing it or making light of it. But I think if we dwell too much in these kind of things and formalize it too much, like it's a normal thing people go through, that in itself creates other problems. A lot of the time, men just need to get on with stuff, become stronger, and become better. And I know that sounds so clichéd, and if it sounds ridicule, then so
in other words, in other words, solutions. Solutions. There has to be a solution. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. I heard someone say once, and I wish I could remember who it was because I thought it was brilliant. This guy always says to his girlfriend or wife when she complains about something, he's like, okay, is this a... we need a solution complaint, or is this you just want someone to listen to you complaint? And that kind of, because he's being so honest with her, she is honest with him. She says to him, no, I'm just complaining. And then he's like, cool, then I'll listen. And then he doesn't have to think of a solution. But if she says this is a solution one, then he's thinking about a solution. So he wants to answer it quickly and say, well, this is what we can do to fix it. And that's a really helpful thing. Which I know has wherever I've heard people implement this, it's made their lives better, their relationship.
You've literally just shared probably the greatest relationship advice ever.
Yeah, well, I mean, maybe. That's why it's stuck in my head. I know in relationships I've been in, when you hear a woman saying this and that, and, you know, she's telling you about stuff, and sometimes it's important stuff, and sometimes she's just venting. And you need to figure out whether, if it's important stuff, whether you are part of the solution situation or whether you're just there as a witness to it because she needs to get it off her chest. Very different things, massively different results. And it requires a very honest approach from both sides. She must tell you, okay, no, this is just a vent. Okay, cool. Then I'll listen. Let's go. But if it's a, we need to solve a problem because the kid isn't doing well at school or whatever, then we figure out a solution to the problem together.
Yeah, it comes on such a huge fundamental. Like, women just need to vent sometimes. So no man should think, well, oh, that's so annoying. It's part of their character. Just like men need to solve, because that makes us feel like we're doing something.
Right. Listen to George. I love how George is on the show this morning, but he's wide awake and in the comments. This is what we love. He says, and by the way, the things George has said this morning is probably better than anything Ben and I have said. Love that, Ben. Feeling is a result of past experiences or past thinking. So is dwelling on feeling. It's living in the past. That's exactly right. Well, I mean, just like there are people, this is something that I think I referred to obliquely in a show this week. I love people who are able to live in the present. And it's a very, it's not something a lot of people can do, by the way. We've got like two minutes to seven. I don't want to breeze past this, but this is such a realization. So a lot of people are consumed by what's happened to them, right? They're captive to their past. And as someone who loves history, I love a study of the past. I can spend a fair amount of time doing that. But in your personal life, in your own existence, your own memories, if you're held captive to your past, you can't really enjoy the moment. Similarly, if you're one of those hugely motivated, skilled, driven individuals who's constantly planning for tomorrow, and you are thinking about the future you and the things you want to do and the places you want to go and the people you want to see, and you're always in the future, you don't enjoy yourself in the present. And the best way to live, for me, it's not always true. You might be happier living in the future or in the past. But to me, true joy, excitement, happiness, gratitude exist in the moment. It's like right now, do I want to be anywhere else but having this conversation on the show? No, then I'm happy.
Yeah, I mean, to put it in even simpler terms, you wouldn't watch the same movie 10 times, right? When you watch a new movie, you're excited because something new is going to happen. It's kind of like that with life as well. We would never watch the same movie over and over and over. We always want to watch something new. And that's how the past and present kind of thing works
for me. Oh, please. I know some people who want to watch the same movie over and over again. I know some people who drive the same road every day to work. I know some people who like eating the same thing for breakfast every day. I know people who... if anything interrupts their day-to-day, ordinary, usual routine, it completely messes with their balance.
No, there's a big difference between routine and not looking at something new. I mean, people drive the same way to work because it's efficient and it saves petrol in an economy where none of us got money, Gareth.
Carl says, oh, that's also true. Did you know that women with nice boobs are listened to 40% less because men are single-minded? It's why they battle to get things off their chest with us men. Oh, great, Carl. Such wisdom. Such wisdom. Where did reaching out come from? What's wrong with contacted or talked to, etc.? Ah, Keith, this is... Oh, I'm so sad. Okay, we're going to have to pick this up after seven. Reaching out. I'm so sick of people saying that, reaching out. I'm just reaching out, like in an email. What, through the ether? What, you're like Michelangelo's painting of God and Adam? What, you're reaching out? No, you're not. You're just emailing me. I'm emailing to tell you the meeting has been canceled at 7. I'm reaching out to let you know that you... Anyway, look, you can see I'm getting excited about this. Let's come back with it in a moment. CliffCentral.com, Friday morning. We got Ben and Dr. Jonathan Witt will be joining us in a short while. That's going to be lots of fun. Plenty to talk to. George Meany bringing up the end of the show for the last couple of minutes with the Auto Trader podcast and a quick look at some of the stuff in motoring and in your world. We'll get to all of that in a short while. Stick around. CliffCentral.com.